exactly 15 seconds, we'll be on the air.
Tonight on the Patty Vasquez Show with Andrea Darlis. It's Wellness Wednesday with Dr. Deborah Keeson. And from the Carnival Restaurant in the West Loop, we have Maria Dillon. We'll also be speaking to Brad Tessel with Dave Lundy. And now, live from the WGN Radio Skyline Studios, we are broadcasting live.
It's Wednesday already, and we are coming to you right after the White Sox game. We're broadcasting from the Allstate Skyline Studios from the 18th floor of the 303. It's the Patty Vasquez Show with Andrea Darlis. Andrea, have you already went to Greece and I feel like you had the FOMO moment where people could see your photos and be like, I want to be there and having fun like Andrea is.
I did, yeah. I was in Greece. I put a few pictures on Instagram, and now everybody's like, you were in Greece. I'm like, yeah, Mykonos. Ah, Mykonos. Where are you now?
And now I know how to say Mykonos.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't think I knew how to say that before. I love that. Now, Dr. Deborah, should I call you Dr. Deborah or Dr.?
Dr. Deborah is great.
Is it? You earned the title, so you...
Yeah, Dr. Deborah is good.
were on our show a few weeks ago. You're a clinical psychologist, and you work a lot with trying to help people, I would say, reset. Is that a good way to put it? You know, when you're all this negative emotion sort of starts to bubble up, find different paths away from that, would you say?
Yeah, and I'd say how to get unstuck. So people come to me and there's something that's kind of holding them hostage, and they know they're uncomfortable. They know that what they're currently doing is not working, but they don't have a path to move forward. And sometimes that could feel pretty hopeless and overwhelming. So coming up with practical steps to take that next step forward and then that step after that, and soon your life is moving forward the way you would hope it would be moving forward.
But are we even able to, with the onslaught and the sort of an inundation of social media, like looking at Andrea's pictures of the Mykonos, mm-hmm. Is it right?
Mykonos.
See, I don't know how to say it. Mykonos.
Very close. You can just say Greece.
No, yeah. Mykonos. I'm going to say I can get there. I'm teachable.
Yes.
But if, you know, people look at photos of what everyone else is doing in the summer, and some of it's the kinds of things that they want to be doing, and they feel like, well, why do they get to and I don't? What's wrong? And they put it on themselves, like something's wrong with me, or they start hating somebody else and feeling jealous. Mm-hmm. Are you finding more patients coming to you feeling that way?
Yeah, sometimes I practice cognitive behavioral therapy, so it's a very hands-on, action-oriented approach where we're looking for homework exercises to start creating immediate change in one's life. And an easy, low-hanging fruit is going on a social media diet where sometimes it's banning altogether, going on Facebook. Sometimes it's limiting it to certain times of the day in certain locations where one has the ability to take a step back and realize that their life is okay also, but certainly controlling that aspect of life and not just letting moments and moments pass where you're comparing yourself to others and getting yourself really kind of down that rabbit hole of feeling that your life just can't.
I had a friend who got off of Facebook for that reason. She said she felt like she was missing things, or other friends would go out. So say you and I are going out, Patty, and we didn't invite Dr. Deborah with
us.
Which
is rude.
Exactly. Like, not that that would ever happen.
Right.
But you would see us and think, oh, well, why wasn't I invited? Mm-hmm. And was literally going into almost a depression, just thinking
yes.
She was being excluded from things. So she got off of Facebook.
That happened to me. We were actually at an event for Michael on Saturday. And I was thinking, because remember we talked about it. We talked about him playing at Bills.
Oh, yeah.
And then a bunch of people were there. And some people I had told about meeting over there and some people I didn't. I just figured people had seen it on social media. And then I thought, was I supposed to invite everybody?
Yeah, I didn't hear about that, you guys. So thanks.
So I know. So that's what I'm saying is that sometimes it's a matter of, you know, is it possible to step back and go, it's not about me, it's about them. You know, maybe they made a mistake. Something's wrong with that. Can't you just put it on somebody else and go there? Like, Patty's a terrible person for not inviting us.
I really think at the end of the day, it's an unhealthy amount of information for the human brain to take in. So
on social media.
Yeah. So before social media, before the internet, maybe you heard somebody had a party you weren't invited to. Maybe you overheard a conversation. And so there were those moments, one or two moments throughout a day. But it wasn't every single time you pick up your phone, you're seeing all different aspects of life that perhaps you're missing out on. And I think it gets all the harder for adolescents who they're... So much of their life is through that social experience and through peers. And so it can be really traumatic for for young people in comparing and contrasting. So.
Is that why they say put the phone down before you go to bed? You know, a lot of times either maybe you'll get an email or a text or you'll see something online and then it'll sit with you and, you know, leads to sleep disorder.
Right. And then you get this, the insomnia, and then the less sleep you're getting also, then it's harder to regulate your emotions. And then there's more of a chance for depression, anxiety too. So there's a lot of vicious cycles that get in play. So I don't mean to make social media, a lot of good things happen. And studies have shown that by the good part of it is when you have genuine connections where you're reaching out to somebody and they're reaching out to you and actually happy brain hormones are happening. The bad part of it is when you're just voyeur, when you're just watching and observing and kind of silently seeing what everyone else is up to. So if you're truly engaging, then some good things are happening and meaningful relationships can continue.
I think so too. I did delete Facebook from all three of my phones today. Oh wait, I have three phones. I'm saying that out loud just sounded weird. I just realized that.
Did you really delete Facebook?
I deleted Facebook from my phones. And this is different. This is not about FOMO. I mean, like sometimes I'll feel like, oh, why? You know, for me, it's sometimes career-wise. You know, I'll see my friends appearing on The Colbert Show. Pat McGann's been on Colbert. You know, I've got my friend Pete, like a bunch of my friends. And I'm a stand-up comic. They're my peers. And I'll see.
And you're happy for them, but you're like, oh.
I'm just like, oh, okay. You know, and you sort of get that, you get that tinge. But I also do something. Is there a way to say I do something that other people don't get to in your life? Like, I get to be me. Is there a way for people to experience, like, you know, you're never going to be that other person. You're not always going to be at all those parties. You get to be you and you have to find the exquisiteness of that.
Yeah. And sometimes it's actually exercising that muscle on a daily basis. So maybe it's taking a moment each day to say, write down one thing that you are proud of yourself for, one moment that you feel good about, and writing it down, journaling, sending. I have some clients that on a daily basis, their homework is just to send me that little moment that they feel proud of, and training your brain to focus on that and not just focus on the parts of your life that you feel bad about or you feel like isn't working out.
Yes. How do you, I mean, I know this is the $64 million question, but how do you train your brain, if I can speak,
yeah,
to
you
do
got
that?
It.
Because, I mean, we've been reading a lot of great texts lately, right, Patty? I mean, so we'll say, listeners are wonderful and great and complimentary. Mm-hmm.
Let's see if they are. I'll check.
Right, but then you get the one person out of, say, 10 or 15, right. And that's the one that sticks with you. So how do you take the steps to train your brain to tune out the bad and focus on
right.
the good?
Right, that's a wonderful question. And by definition, our brain is meant to hone in on risk. So if we're in a gorgeous jungle with beautiful flowers and a beautiful waterfall, and yet there's a teeny tiny snake slithering by, we're supposed to hone in on the snake and those purple, beautiful flowers just kind of melt away, and that helps with survival. So our brain is, it's much more beneficial to focus on that thing that could be dangerous. And so
a threat.
Okay. So, and that could be a social threat. It could be because we benefit by working in tribes and in groups. So it's natural for our brain to hone in on the threat. So teaching our brain to actually redirect attention to a non-threat or a positive motion is a muscle like any other muscle that we can strengthen through practice and consistency.
So one of the homework elements that you give your patients is to write one thing, a positive about yourself every day, which is something everybody can do.
Right.
Write something that you're proud of every day.
Right. Like, what is one thing that you are proud of today?
One thing that I'm proud of.
And I'm going to think, too, for my own life.
I
have one, too.
I swore in front of my son, so I'm not proud of that.
Uh-oh.
Okay. you focused in on the snake. Good job.
I did. Yeah, I was like, I didn't know he was in the other room, and I was on the phone with somebody, and, like, news was breaking, and I was swearing. So, not that.
I would say I got a surprise visitor for dinner.
Aw.
And brought me
it's
pizza.
A positive thing, yeah.
That was a great, very happy.
Very nice.
Yeah.
I found a new restaurant today, which I'm very excited. Mescalina, by the way. Have you seen this?
No,
there's like a wonderful
it?
Little area, but that's it's right by that little pocket, like Mariano's.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
There's like a little courtyard there. But is there a difference between something you're proud of and something that's positive?
Well, you know what? Training your brain to focus in on the joy and the goodness and the positive moments, wonderful. Training your brain to focus on a moment about self that feels good and positive is also another good thing to focus on. So right. they're both really good. They're a little bit different and both critical.
Yeah. So there you go. So positive things. Latch onto the positive. Eliminate the negative. And don't mess with Mr. In Between. Nobody knows that song?
Don't.
You gotta accentuate positive. Eliminate the negative. Don't. Let down to the affirmative. Don't mess with Mr. In Between. No, I don't sing, Doc. So I just want to say for you.
It was very positive.
There you go. I think Bing Crosby also, I don't know, that felt weird. But no.
And we cannot eliminate the negative aspects of our brain because they're critical. And as disgust keeps us alive, the goal is just to redirect after that data is taken in. Okay, so this street is dark. I won't walk down it. Okay, that person maybe gave me a nasty look. Got it. Noticing what is critical information, but then not getting sucked into it, but then moving on. That's okay. The key.
So move on. Acknowledge.
Acknowledge.
Right, so you can also, does that also mean acknowledging the pain of being left out?
Yeah.
Of not enjoy. So acknowledge it and be aware of it.
Right, and it's valid. You can feel it. It's okay to feel the pain. It's okay to feel jealousy. It's okay to feel hurt. These are normal
emotions.
But just
don't let it eat you alive. Just don't let it stay with you.
Right. Just don't get sucked under, consumed by it. Notice it, validate it, and then choose, okay, and now I'm moving on.
Moving on. Well, we're not moving on from this. We have more conversation coming up with Dr. Deborah Kissin. And by the way, how can people find out more about the work that you do, including what is CBT?
CBT is cognitive behavioral therapy. So it's looking at the thoughts, the cognitions, looking at the behaviors that may be blocking progress in your life, and then coming up with healthier ways to interact with the experience of life. And any questions, you could contact me directly. Go to our website, lightonanxiety.com, and you could ask us questions there. And we're always looking for ways to help out. So anyone struggling with, reach out. We're here.
Excellent. When we come back after the news later, we'll talk about getting out there, taking risks, maybe other avenues for dating that you know more about as well. You're listening to The Patty Vasquez Show with Andrea Darlis. More after this on 720 WGN. This was one of my favorite songs growing up. This and Have You Ever Wanted to Swing on a Star? Carrie Moonbeam's Home in a Jar. Be Better Off Than You Are.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that was one of these. Because they were Bing Crosby songs, too.
Oh, I always like, yes. You Are My Sunshine. Mm-hmm. But if you read like the first verse of that song, right, yes. And the third verse of that song, it's like, whoa, that's a dark song. Except for that one verse, You Are My Sunshine, My Only Sunshine.
Oddly enough, also sung by Bing Crosby.
Yes.
Yes, I have the whole Bing Crosby out. My dad was a big Bing Crosby fan, Doc. Yeah. We are hanging out in studio with Dr. Deborah Kissin. We're going to continue our conversation when we come back. But first, we're going to go to the news.
This is my favorite Moonlight song.
It's also Bing. My dad was a big Bing Crosby fan, so that's lovely. That's lovely. We are broadcasting live from the Allstate Skyline Studios on the 18th floor of the 303. That's what we're calling it. The 303. Is it lowercase the? I think it's a lowercase.
I think so, yeah.
It's kind of
the 303.
Funky.
It does.
It's kind of cool.
It makes the 303 really stand out.
I think so. I like that. You're listening to The Patty Vasquez Show with Andrea Darlis. Joining us in studio is Dr. Deborah Kissin. She is the clinical director of Light on Anxiety Treatment Center, and she specializes in cognitive behavioral therapy for anxiety and related disorders. She is the author of the Panic Workbook for Teens and is an active contributor to the Huffington Post, shares information on empirically supported treatment for anxiety and related disorders. And we were talking about how much we, you know, can have access to all the information out there, seeing what our friends are doing and enjoying themselves, and then also become increasingly disconnected. And that seems to be true for a lot of my friends who are single, and they're using a lot of these dating apps. They're on Bumble, they're on Tinder, I don't even know the rest.
Christian Mingle, there's so many
Farmers
out there.
Only
Coffee Meets Bagel,
J Swipe,
right? Not that we know any of these.
No, I know, we're just all over the place on that. But are people finding connections? Because it seems like they're messaging each other and going, hey, what's up? And then it turns, kind of can turn negative too, in sort of this weird vortex. Mm-hmm. Seems
it. From my clients' perspective, and so I have clients across different age groups, and some are having a lot of success and the frequency of meeting people and kind of keeping up with the dating. It's a lot of work. It seems almost like another job, and it takes a lot of energy to maintain the dating effort with these apps. And some of my clients are getting more and more burnt out and kind of giving up. These apps aren't working for me.
Right.
And at the same time, I'm not meeting people in my day-to-day life. And maybe I need to just accept that I'm going to never find a partner, even though that's one of the most important things that I want out of my life. And that's a really hard place to be in, especially because there are people around us all the time. And the question is, how do we find ways to connect with those around us when and not just through apps.
My mom is a senior citizen, obviously, and her friend just went through a death of a first husband and a divorce recently. And she said, you know, I'm not going to do... She said she was too old to do dating apps and stuff. And we're like, no, you should do it. But she said she started to join clubs, like gardening clubs.
Nice.
To meet, you know, friends. Well, guys, too.
Yeah.
But and friends, which is kind of cool. So maybe,
that's,
you know,
so
finding
wonderful.
A club or something of that has an interest of yours.
Yes.
With the same, you know, with the same people.
I agree. My husband always says this. I have several single friends, and he's like, look, they love animals. Why aren't they part of, like, the, you know, these fundraisers at the Lincoln
like
Park
paws.
Zoo?
Exactly. Yeah.
You know, get involved in things like that.
Right. Meetup is a wonderful, wonderful inventory of different groups going on throughout the city. And so you could really, if you know that you enjoy volleyball, finding a league and meeting other people who enjoy it through religious organizations, sometimes just chatting with the person next to you at Starbucks. I know it's shocking, but...
Wait, what?
Yeah, sometimes just making conversation and saying hello to another person, and you just never know, that human connection might lead to the next moment. And sometimes we're so, our heads down, looking on our phone, looking for ways to connect with people and not looking at those around us, that... They're all there.
And it would seem if women do that, if women say hi, because, you know, a lot of men are afraid to because of Me Too movement, or we talk a lot about catcalling or inappropriately talking to. I mean, saying hello is one thing. If we can let guys know there's a way to not be creepy and say hi. Mm-hmm. But also if women maybe take an initiative, you know, because I think guys would, don't you think men would appreciate being said hello to by a woman?
Sure. Yeah. And I think we all appreciate when someone looks us in the eye and just has a genuine hello and is sending their energy our way. It feels good no matter what.
Yes.
To feel that someone's presence is coming your way.
Right.
And so, and I think setting the attention to, like, I'm going to be open in this moment. I know that sounds a little hokey in terms of our energy being closed or energy being open, but I think we do end up sending a signal with our body language of I'm open to speaking to another person. I'm open to making eye contact with another person.
And can you let people know that there is a difference between sort of a creepy hello and, like, as you mentioned, a genuine hello, being open to a warm moment? Because there is a distinction.
Well, what comes to mind for you when you think
of a creepy
hello?
Walking down the street, the guy, walking down, yeah, exactly.
I can't, would, hey, baby.
Would, hey. Hi. You know, yeah, because I've wanted to stop and ask guys if they say hello to every single person that walks by.
Yeah.
I mean, I get the idea of taking your swings at people, but I'm like, I don't, just, yeah, there's a creepy hello.
Yeah, there's a little too much eye contact, there's a creepy hello, and all those things are possible. I think most of the time we err in the direction of more closed off versus overly friendly and overly creepy in our modern society of...
Err on the side of caution and be it warm. It's hard. I know it's a lot of work.
Yeah, it's a delicate balance. It's true.
Do you think there's positive, like my mom always would say, you know, be
your
positive.
Your mom sounds very cute.
She's adorable. Yeah. You guys would love her, but send positive vibes, positive, you know. Do you think that? I mean,
do you think
holding a door open for somebody or just...
Yes.
You know, don't you think, right?
That's
or holding the elevator or letting you out of the elevator first. I mean, doesn't it...
You never know.
In positive vibes?
I really do. And I really do think so, because our brains are constantly picking up on assessing different information that we're getting from another person. So reading another person's eyes, reading a hand motion. So we're really picking up on exchanges with each other in ways beyond just that verbal exchange.
Yeah,
I agree. Yeah. I agree. And so there are great ways to make connections with people. Again, we're talking to Dr. Deborah Kissin, who wants to encourage you to find new ways to make personal connections with people.
I just read that appointed a director of loneliness in England, or a administration of loneliness, to combat the epidemic of loneliness, because it really is a problem that more and more people are feeling isolated and feeling lonely, and the correlations with health and so many other things. So I do think in our modern times, loneliness is a bit of an epidemic.
I think you're absolutely right about that. So we've talked a little bit about, one, when you see so many things on social media that looks like other people are getting things that you don't have, remember to accentuate the positive.
You're right. Yeah, the UK appoints a minister for loneliness. Cool article in the New York Times.
I want that position.
That's a neat...
Minister of Loneliness.
Yeah.
To help people find ways to...
That is so interesting to me. It said Britain...
I think we might need one of those.
Britain had a serious
problem
with loneliness. More than 9 million in the country feel lonely or have been treated for depression. That's a huge number.
And I do think at the heart of the disorders, I'm giving air quotes because I think disorders is a harsh word, but the suffering that I see in our treatment center, the depression, anxiety, at the end of the day, it really is about loneliness, fear of isolation, fear of rejection, engaging in different safety behaviors to avoid being rejected, which end up leaving one feeling isolated. So much of, I think, the suffering that's happening is due to loneliness.
Yeah. Well, there's so much more to learn about this, and we look forward to having you back on the show again soon, too. And I know that you do contribute to Huffington Post, so folks can search for you there.
Absolutely.
As well as social media, at Light on Anxiety.
At Light on Anxiety. We are on Twitter. I try to not produce any content that will create FOMO, but only healthy, upbeat tips and pointers. We're always putting blogs out there. We have a webzine on Light on Anxiety. So we're always trying to get good information out there to help our visitors take that next step forward.
Excellent. Thank you so much for joining us again.
Thank you,
Deborah. And look forward again, like I said, to having you back very soon. And, you know, maybe a little bit earlier. I know that it's your first time in the new studio.
Anytime. I love being here.
Yay. More after this. We're going to talk to our friends from Carnival and see what wonderful event they have coming up to remember Anthony Bourdain and shed a light on suicide. More after this on 720 WGN. Andrea. Have you ever had the pleasure of dining at Carnival?
I have, Patty.
Oh, my God.
I love how you asked me this because we took, not to make my mom the focal point, but we took her there for her birthday last year, and they made her the cigar cake. It looks like they have a humidor, and the cake comes out, but the cake is chocolate, and then there's dulce de leche ice cream, I believe it is. It's wonderful. We had the cotton candy, and best time ever.
Oh, well, that's why I'm so glad that you get to meet Maria from Carnival.
Hello.
Hello. How are you doing, my friend Maria Dillon?
Fantastic. How are you all doing?
I'm very well. Awesome. Now, who are we putting on microphone? Because I don't want to miss anybody. Are you going on microphone with us?
Yes.
All right. Hello, my friend.
Hi. How are you?
Introduce yourself.
My name is Doug, and I work with Maria over at Carnival.
In what capacity do you work with Maria at Carnival?
I am one of our sales managers, so I do most of our events. Mm-hmm. You know, Maria being our manager, we work together very closely, and, you know, what we're here to talk about today is one of our special events that we have coming up.
And this is an incredible event, and I know this is something that's close to your heart and very personal for you, Maria. You were doing an event that is remembering Anthony Bourdain coming up on Tuesday, July 3rd. Where did the desire to make sure that you did something to honor Anthony Bourdain and what he struggled with come from?
You know, it's a long, long time. A long, long time ago. I think it was the first time I ever watched him when he was probably on the Food Network. I fell in love with somebody who had the capability of taking me to places, educating me on food, on culture, on destinies. I'm going to cry.
And it was so real and had no fear.
He was just himself. And in this industry, in this restaurant industry that we're in, we work these long hours, and, you know, you don't get a vacation like normal people do. So it's always nice to go home after a 14-hour day, and sometimes it is. And you kind of just, like, you got to decompress. And to put him on, especially with Destinations Unknown, for me was a nightly thing, and it helped me escape everything that I went through my whole entire day. And he brought me to, like, that fantasy place of travel, food, culture, and I didn't have to worry about anything.
Was there a lot of it that reminded you of why you're so passionate? Because I was telling this to someone the other day about working in restaurants, especially if I would pull a double. So let's say I was a server for 12 hours.
Right.
And it's the noise, it's the smell, it's the pace, you know, trying to make sure everyone's happy. And you know, you kind of can get away from what the purpose is of inviting people into a business to feed them, to provide them a space to entertain and to have a celebration or to just nourish themselves. And I think that's a lot of what he brought us back to, is like the spiritual part of eating.
It is. And it's almost like a place to where everybody comes and gathers, and just, it's like a family moment almost. It's almost like it's not a Christmas morning, but it's like that feeling that I would get watching him on TV.
And I loved his, one of the biggest parts, I think, too, was the conversations that you'd have. I mean, think about it. Anytime you say, let's get together, it's usually for dinner or for a meal or for a cocktail. He brought those conversations into your living room, and they were just so heartfelt.
Right. And they were about not just food, but it was about cultures and talking about different topics that didn't even have to do with food. So it was a full education. I didn't go to college. So he helped me learn a lot of things that I didn't have the capability of learning.
And he wanted us to know about the people, too, mm-hmm. which was amazing. The people who make your food, the people from other countries that maybe we just write off as being from an S-hole or, you know, being, you know, people that aren't worthy of our attention. Because, right. you know, because of their culture, because of their religion and things like that. Right. And he wanted us to know more about them.
Right. There was no boundaries with him as far as trying to find out who somebody was, what their culture was, and to explore that and to give us a people, anybody, the knowledge that we wouldn't have any type of, you know, disrespect towards any type of race.
Right.
And that's one thing that I really loved about him.
Well, and that's what a lot of people highlighted, because he wrote so much. And so it's not just passionately, but so accessibly, you know, in a way that was like, you could feel it come right off the page, Doug, couldn't you?
Absolutely. That's exactly kind of why I fell in love with the man, because of his words. I mean, I remember when I was in college, actually, when I was a freshman back in 2006, one of our required readings, and I was in hospitality school, mind you, was Kitchen Confidential. I remember reading this man's words and, you know, hearing all these tales of drug binging and harassment in the kitchen and all these things, but somehow still coming out, being completely enamored in the restaurant world and being just, and it, exactly what you're saying, the accessibility of it. It hit me and it continued to inspire me. And that was a long time ago. And I'm still remembering everything that I... It was brought up in me from his words. You know, he took what a lot of us feel about the restaurant industry and our passion for hospitality, and he made it just fun to hear and made it hip.
And I get the feeling, Maria, from you in particular, and I think from a lot of people who just, they want to understand, and they wish they could have said something. I think there's so many people who feel like, I wish I could have told him how much he meant to me. Like,
yeah.
You know, that, and then to think that none of it was enough. Is hard for all of us
it
to cope
hard.
With.
It is hard.
And I so appreciate that you are doing this event and that proceeds, 25% of the proceeds are going to the National Suicide Prevention Hotline, because none of us can ever understand. Even if we've had fleeting moments of, I just don't want to be here anymore, whatever that means, we don't know what that other person's struggle is that leads them to that moment. We've had a listener, and I hope Lulu is listening tonight, because, you know, she told us one night that, you know, she figured no one would care if she was gone. And I have to say to a lot of people out there, there are people who would be devastated if you were no longer here. And maybe that's not enough, but it's important to know that even if I see somebody in the newspaper that I never knew, you know, and I see the stories about their families, it's devastating.
It is devastating. I don't think people realize that there is help out there and there are people that care and there's hope and there's people that will reach out and hold your hand and take you somewhere and give you the guidance and the help that you need. And that's a message that we're trying to, you know, spread as well. Besides the fact that we adored this legend who was an extraordinary man, there is also a world out there that 25% of this world, yeah, that has issues that need to be dealt with, and we're willing and wanting to be there for them.
And what a great, great venue. Carnival, yes. I mean, itself is just lively and spirited, and the restaurant's so colorful. So, I mean, what a happy, positive venue in
right.
which to hold the event.
Yeah, it's a great, I mean, it's a celebratory place. It's
absolutely.
Fantastic,
yeah.
Right? It's wonderful. Like, you know, from the time you walk in until the time you walk out, you're happy. You're in a great mood. There's so many things to look at, and there's so many different, you know, your sight, your touch, your smell, everything is going on there. So to do something like this there has a lot of meaning to us. We're going to try to do an open mic and leave that open for people who have a story to tell and want to express themselves, project some, you know, images of him around with our media. We have a couple of TVs, a projector.
That's cool.
And do some Destination Unknown series going on. It definitely will be a night for people to come and gather and just, you know, be one.
Yeah.
And one with yeah. one another.
It is, and I only draw that comparison because Kate Spade had taken her life that week as well. And, we've talked in that week and in the week since, we've talked about, you know, how do we... to have this conversation. Mm-hmm. When Robin Williams took his life, I'm a stand-up comic, been a comic my entire life. So I identify with, you know, if someone in my own industry who kind of was the symbol of what it was to be at the top of your game in our industries, in the restaurant industry, in right. the comedy world, in design, in whatever. And here's the thing, though. It's anybody. Anybody, you know, people think, well, if somebody like Anthony Bourdain or Robin Williams or Kate Spade, if nothing is ever enough for them, well, how am I going to make it?
Right.
And that's the thing, is it's not about how, there wasn't about their wealth or the people that were around them. It's something that they latched onto. And celebrating life, I think, is so important, which you do all the time at Carnival.
Right.
That's the entire idea of it, isn't it?
It is.
Well, and what have you, how have you chosen this menu to sort of, you know?
You know, Carnival is known for our Latino global cuisine, right? So we collectively as a staff, you know, think about who he was as a person. He was a simple guy, and we are known for our beautiful Latino cuisine, but yet we're doing this crazy menu that is actually French.
Cool. Oh, yeah.
Right? So it's going to be totally different. We're doing escargot. And we're going to pair that with Delirium bottled beer, which is something that he loves so much, just to do a bottle of beer and have a shot in his hand.
Oh, yeah.
So you have this like beautiful escargot, and then you're going to have
a
little beer and a shot, right? Okay. And then we're doing roasted duck breast, and we're just going to pair that with a glass of Zinfandel. Mm-hmm. And our dessert, but, you know, the man did not love dessert. That was a little twist and thing. He'd rather sit around and sip on some scotch or maybe do a flight of whiskey or whatever the case may be. But we're doing macaroons, and we're going to do some Jack Daniels and just, like, sip on some Jack Daniels afterwards.
Doug, I saw you look away wistfully when you were thinking about not dessert and whiskey instead or bourbon.
Oh, yeah, you called me out, didn't you?
I saw you looking at, like, what have I got at home?
Yeah.
Yeah, go ahead.
We were talking about that earlier, that, you know, that's one of the things that I really loved about him, and he was just so unapologetic, and he was himself. And we were, you know, talking earlier before we came in here and about our favorite episodes, and I was thinking about, you know, how, yeah, the man had his demons, but he didn't hide, and he would always be the end of the night, you know, you'd see him on a pedicab home, you know, like off his rocker, you know, but he still would come back and talk about it and talk about passion and say nothing but good things. And you know, that's why, you know, when she's talking about that, we were laughing about how he wouldn't have eaten dessert, you know, right. He wouldn't have had dessert.
And yet I do appreciate the coconut pie of a cake and the
key lime cake. More than welcome, ma'am. Thank you.
And extraordinary avocado. Guacamole. Ooh. I was telling Maria earlier and all of our friends from Carnival that we should do a WGN recess at Carnival and learn how to make something.
Absolutely we should.
Yes.
Saying, we haven't done like a food event really.
That's a great idea. And we could start with, I mean, I love guacamole so much. I do not make great
so
guac.
Easy.
I know everyone says it's so easy, but I always never know cilantro or tomato or
no onion for this girl over
the trick.
There.
Okay. The trick, here's the number one.
And I put too much lime in too.
Well, here's the number one trick. You got to start with a good avocado.
There you go.
That's very true.
We should do it. It's a good avocado. We'll start with guac and then work our way up.
Yeah. It's so funny. I still haven't mastered it. My mom can always pick out the best, and she always buys them that they're not ripe yet. So she lets them ripen.
Sit out for a couple of days. Absolutely.
And then, you know, from the, well, we'll talk about it when we take the recess.
Yeah.
How can people, we've got to do that.
Yeah.
Tell us more. How can people find out more about the event and where they can buy tickets for this?
It's open to the public, which is the beautiful thing. We did not want to have any restrictions on it. So we have an open dining room, open lounge. We are doing our a la carte menu. We're doing the prefix menu. You can go to our website and you can go to Instagram. You can make reservations through our website or you can call us.
Excellent.
I mean, it's very, very easy.
I'm so glad that you're doing this. And I know that it's both a way to help heal yourself and also bring attention to something that's so important. Again, it's the Remembering Anthony Bourdain at Carnival on Tuesday, July 3rd. It's from 5 p.m. to 9 p.m. And the 25% of the proceeds are going to the National Suicide Prevention Hotline. Oh, I look so forward to seeing you again.
Yeah, I look forward to seeing you too.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
I love you guys.
Thanks for coming
in. Yes, thank you so much. We're going to take a quick break here in the news. And on Monday, we had talked to a couple of our friends who are lifelong Republicans. And I thought tonight would be a good time to talk to a couple of our friends who are Democrats and talk about the future of the party in particular as to address what Maxine Waters, Representative Maxine Waters said earlier this week. And I think a lot of people were disappointed and disgusted. So let's talk about that more after this on 720 WGN.
You're listening to the Patty Vasquez Show with Andrea Darlis. We're broadcasting live from the Allstate Skyline Studios. It's beautiful. Oh, you know what, Andrea? I forgot to mention this earlier.
Yes.
It's a beautiful night in Chicago.
Oh my God, I know. There's no rain. It's not
weather.
Too humid.
It's so nice.
It's beautiful.
It's so nice.
Going to shoot back up to the mid-90s in the next couple days.
Oh yeah. Okay, well, let's hold off on that.
Yeah.
It's going to be blisteringly hot. On Monday night, we invited Eric Elk and Scott Stantis to the show. They are regulars on the show. They're both lifelong Republicans, and over the course of the last year or so, and since the election and during the campaigning, they both expressed concern over their party and what direction it was going in, and I thought it was an excellent conversation. I grew up in a household that was, my father was a lifelong Republican, my mother was a lifelong Democrat, and, you know, people will hear what they want to hear.
Absolutely.
And so on this show, I grew up in a conversation where you talked it out.
Yes.
And we're not, and I guess that's why I try to be civil, whether it's on social media or a conversation with my friends. I'm very close friends with both Eric and Scott. I'm very close friends with Dave Lundy, who joined us in studio, because I also got the sense from some of the posts that he has put on social media that he is concerned about his party and the tone of rhetoric over the weekend. You know, we've talked about how Republicans who were never Trumpers, or maybe they didn't agree with a lot of the policy or the tone or the direction of the party. That was what Eric Elk and Scott wanted to talk about what the core concepts are of being conservative. And then over the weekend, Sarah Huckabee Sanders was asked to leave
a restaurant,
and which struck me as odd, and that escalated quickly. And then on Monday, Representative Maxine Waters said that, you know, Democrat, if you see anyone in the Trump administration, you should approach them, tell them they're not welcome. And Brad Tassel wants to jump in too.
Call him out, yeah.
Are you a Democrat?
As of Reagan, I have become a Democrat. Although I did vote for the first President Bush.
Okay, well now that's something else we've talked about too, is voting for person and policy.
Yes.
And rather than party. Now, Dave Lundy, we've talked about your politics before on the show. I think that you
once or twice.
Yes, here and there. It was your post that I saw sort of a lot of people who disagreed with you, and everyone, you know, went back and forth, and Republicans jumped into the conversation. But you take the stance that it was not okay to basically sick people on public servants.
Yeah, I mean, I think that what I was reacting to, well, you know this, Patty, because you've attended my political lunches. Civility is important to me.
Yes.
And
uncontrollable cackling might have been the worst I've ever done there. But
yeah,
that's...
you know, and occasionally I slip. We all slip when talking about politics. But I think it's really important to maintain a civil tone. And what civility means to me is don't make it personal.
Right.
Don't question the motives of the person on the other side. Don't tell me that I am a social justice warrior because I'm upset that you're ripping kids out of the arms of their parents. I'm not a social justice warrior. I'm not doing this as virtue signaling. What the hell is virtue signaling? Well, if you listen to Sean Hannity and all these people on the right, this is it. It's about virtue signaling. No, I'm telling you what I feel. I'm telling you what I experience. And I just think that tone is important. And so when Maxine Waters gives her shtick, and now Maxine Waters has done a lot of crazy things in her career as a legislator, but when she got out in this crowd, said, when you see Trump people in public, you know, swarm them and, you know, call them out. It's like, no. Now, does that mean that there, you know, I was having this debate with a friend tonight in preparation for coming on the show. I'm like, well, you know, if I saw Stephen Miller in a restaurant, would I call him out? Yeah, you're darn right I would. But that's, you know, I would quietly say, you know, yo, fascist.
What about Steve Bannon? What if Steve Bannon's having dinner at the next table?
Oh. Well, Steve Bannon's irrelevant because he's, you know, out of the White House.
But like Rush Limbaugh being there, who cares?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah. But Stephen Miller is.
But my point is someone whose politics you just crazy disagree with.
But
you know,
Bannon
it could
is
be
not
someone...
a public servant. And here's the thing, and I'm sorry, let me, he's not a public servant. And
yes.
This is the thing I would always cringe when I would see someone, when I was spending time in Springfield, I would cringe when I would see a constituent like race up to a legislator and just like basically poking them in the chest and let me tell you something.
Right.
Well, that legislator's done with you. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like they're not, they don't, they're, but if you, the, I don't know about if the protests worked or not in the Capitol, but people who introduced themselves and said, look, this is why I'm concerned. This is why I'm upset about what you're doing. I often found that legislators, whether or not they ever changed their ways or addressed it, at least would stand there and listen to the conversation. Now, Brad, one of the reasons I wanted you to come in tonight, well, one, you're at Zanies in, are you at Zanies in St. Charles?
St. Charles on the weekend. Great. Come on out. Go ahead.
Yes, come on out to Zanies in St. Charles.
Zanies is the greatest club ever in the planet of Earth.
I've known you. Yes, it is. I've known you for a long time. Actually, the first time we ever met was at Zanies in Mount Prospect and many years ago. And you and I never really ever talked politics. Last time you were on the show, you're somebody that I love what you talk about when it comes to bullying and harassing people and making people feel small and how we can work together. And I also have noticed that you come in on conversations and you always take a level tone when it's political.
Well, that's my goal. Because my goal is, here's the point of all this stuff when you talk about the yelling and screaming and all this. They're trying to change the conversation, especially when the really right wing comes on and they're calling it like the jacket. I don't care. You don't care. This is trying to get the conversation away from the truth, which is the terrible thing that they're doing.
Right.
So we won't talk about it anymore. So when I hear Democrats do it and Maxine Waters, which is one of the reasons I would agree that was stupid, is that changes the narrative. It changes what we're saying. We have to keep focusing on what's real and what's wrong. And that's why I don't like when we make fun of people's looks and we make fun of other things that aren't involved in exactly what is going on.
Well, then it becomes a character assassination.
That's right.
Basically.
And that's all they do is character assassination to say, look over there, look over there.
And distraction. Yeah,
and distraction.
It's all about distraction.
So that's what it's all about. So when we do it, I can't stand it, especially when it's a lie and it's wrong or people post things that are terrible. I'm always on Democrats about that. Don't make up stuff. Keep the point out there. But also I'm a coward. So that's the other thing, too. So if Steve Bannon was in a restaurant, I would be like, oh, my God, that's Steve Bannon. Ask him how the cheese plate was.
God, I can't stand him. And then rock out the front door.
Hey, Steve. Ooh, wow. Mm-mm, bye.
No. I would take a selfie with him, like, over my shoulder.
Oh, me too.
Right.
I'd be all about it.
Doing, like, the little head.
Well, first of all, I wouldn't know it was him. Somebody would have to tell me it was him because I don't really... I can picture kind of a big... I picture like John Goodman or something. I can't picture...
Oh, good point.
What does he look like?
Yeah, well, I probably would do to Steve Bannon with the selfie what I do with Trump Tower from time to time. Just flipping the bird.
Let's take a break here on that. We're talking about civility and we're flipping
and
birds
let's flip the
towers.
Bird, baby.
In a picture.
312-981-7200. As always, this is your conversation. 312-981-7200. You can call or text us. We are live in the Allstate Skyline Studios. Joining us is Dave Lundy, who is the president of Aileron Communications and previously a regular on Tuesday. I'm sorry. I don't know why that just strikes me. I'm going to fix your chair in a second, Brad. I promise.
Okay, great,
Brad Tassel, comedian, and he's a writer. He also has. Have you? Is it a tour with Marriage and Mayhem?
Yeah, I'm going to the Edinburgh Comedy Festival with my new one man show, Marriage and Mayhem. 25 years married, 30 years in comedy, and I want to go out and celebrate that. I want to celebrate marriage because I've always loved marriage, and I think if it didn't work out for you, I'm sorry, but it's not marriage's fault.
It is not marriage's fault.
So I want to do shows everywhere, and it's cheap and it's fun. And we're Evansville. Buy tickets.
St. Charles this weekend.
Yes, more, buy tickets there too.
And by the way, the 870 always a question for when we come back. Where was the outrage when the other prez did the kid stuff? Even though we haven't talked about that, we'll see if we can get to that. More after this on 720 WGN. Does the political landscape become, well, they did it, so why are you complaining when we do it? Or they did it, so we should do it, and I don't know what to do anymore. I will say this. It seems as though Republicans are much stronger on messaging. We have in studio with us Dave Lundy just snapped his head toward me like, what? Dave Lundy, president of Aileron Communications, Brad Tassel, comedian, author, keynote speaker, all kinds of things. Oh, whatever. Did you say whatever?
Whatever. Whatever.
You're listening to the podcast.
I was at ISTE this weekend presenting my little... I have some little books on... I have a book called, if you want to look it up, called Could You Be President? Two Voices Poetry about the president and about being the president and how to become the president, the Electoral College.
Oh, God.
I was doing a lot of programs the year before the election coming up, and boy, by December after the election, no school suddenly wanted to do any programs learning about the... So schools do these programs because we really learn and we discuss these things with these kids. We learn how what it takes to be president, and we don't do anything political. We don't take on those issues, but we really they learn about what's kind of how the Electoral College has changed over the years and how it was real heavy one way and now it's in Wyoming 300 it takes 400 votes in California to equal one vote in Wyoming. So
Dave, are Republicans better at messaging, or are they more successful with messaging? How's that?
Well, the answer is yes. Death tax. Welfare queen and
death panel,
death panels, and a lot of death,
racism, a lot of racism too.
I think Republicans have historically been better at this stuff, particularly in the modern era. And it's very frustrating as Democrats. This is an old situation. This is an old problem. It's not like this just happened in the era of Trump. Because I remember having this discussion in 1994. At a friend's house, and he had organized a whole lot of Democrats together to talk about, oh my God, what happened in 90 in the election in 94? And for those of you who may have just been born in 1994, I would suggest it was one of the first massive waves. It was a massive Republican wave, and Democrats got wiped out in 94. And we were talking about, what happened here? Why is this going on? And it was pretty clear to me anyway. Republicans speak to your heart. And Democrats speak to your head. And if it's your heart versus your head, your heart wins.
Well, and even the messaging and the topics, like they're coming for your guns.
Right.
Is a
fear.
Is a bigger thing than women's reproductive rights.
Right.
People saying they're with Planned Parenthood isn't the same as they're coming for your guns. Issues like that.
Haven't you guys seen those since we were in college? I have so many friends who have switched political parties. Some were just staunch Democrats and now are, hardcore Republicans, but many who were very, into Reaganomics and whatnot and, both President Bush's, and now are just completely, go Hillary.
Well, most of my Republican friends are can't handle this, can't handle Trump. There are obviously exceptions, and you've seen them, Patty. But I would say that, a lot more of them are like, Stantis and Elk and, moderate Republicans who are just like, I just can't take it. And just within the last week, Steve Schmidt, who was Bush's campaign manager.
Mm-hmm.
George Will. And Steve Schmidt both are saying, if you want to defend this country, you must vote Democrat. Mm-hmm. And these both of these guys are lifelong conservatives, lifelong Republicans, and they're saying our country is under siege. And so I have a lot more of those and far fewer who, like Roebling's story will say, well, I was a Democrat once. Yeah, you were 19 and you're not now. So,
well, let me say this. Who's your mayor?
Rahm Emanuel.
I live in Kentucky. So that here's my how was your polling station?
How y'all doing?
How was your polling station when you went to vote for Trump or Hillary? Was it okay? People
it was
there?
Fine.
Yeah. Well, there was trucks driving around with rebel flags, screaming at minorities at mine. They were in line, long lines of white people yelling, "Trump, Trump, we want Trump, Trump." That was my polling place that I went to. So it's a little different story when I talk about the Republicans where I'm from.
Right.
Now, a lot of them in my neighborhood, because my neighborhood is very mixed. I have quite a few Muslims in my neighborhood. I have quite a few. But the people really hold down that hate, even though I know they have it. I can see them seething when we're talking in the streets. But they will, because they try to bring it up to me. And I immediately assuage them from talking about it because I know if I get into it, they're going to start. So they're just hemming and hawing now. Well, he's trying and that was kind of bad that, but he doesn't mean it, it's just because they like me. And I like them, so I'm not going to say, no, this is one of the most evil people we've ever seen in the United States. He truly would like to make this Germany. I mean, that's the, but of course, again, I have the most white guilt of any man you've ever seen. So I just want you to know, I want to give it all away.
Give it
I
all.
Say no.
You want to give the white guilt away?
Yeah, I want no. I would like to assuage it by saying that no one ever vote for an old white man ever again. I don't care who it is. I don't care what they're running for. No more old white men. There, that's my thing.
So there's Brad. Brad's platform is.
That's my thing.
The long fit on a bumper sticker.
Be an old white man.
And if you turn that into a movie, you might call it No Country for Old White Men.
Yes,
that's right. No Country for Old White Men.
Brad would like to also add the caveat that he is an old white man. That was not said. That he does not represent the thoughts and opinions of the show. Regardless of the mechanism of hearing, for the most part, is supposed to function the same for everybody. But what it doesn't seem to work that way. I could say one thing and everyone hears what they want. So that,
that's right.
And
that's
as an aging white man, you know, I don't know about that.
But, all right, then. Yeah. That's fine.
But I'd like to go back to the civility question for a second.
That's absolutely where we absolutely, that's the, and that's the biggest part of this is the civility question.
Because one of the reactions that I've seen on Twitter and Facebook with my friends and there's this common theme of folks on the left who's like, oh, yeah, we were civil to Trump and how'd that work out? Or, oh, yeah, we were civil and now we got Gorsuch. And, oh, yeah, we were civil. It's like, whoa. You are presenting a false choice. You're doing the kind of things that Trump does and you're doing it badly. It is not a choice of I can either be a civil human being or we can win. That's not it. It's about political effectiveness is not the opposite of civility.
And I shared that quote from my friend Kermit Appio, where he was talking about, you know, when you do this, you are showing that you cannot win on policy, but only on hate.
Right. But protest is not being uncivil.
Correct.
Good night, everybody. Thank you. That's it. Show's over.
They solved it. They got it all out right there. Let's take a quick break here. More conversation when we come back. And I will get to the 870s question when we return on 720 WGN. It's the Patty Vasquez Show with Andre Darlis. Earlier this week, we invited Scott Stantis and Eric Elk, two lifelong Republicans, to talk about the future of their party. They both have expressed concern about the direction in which what they believe to be the party that really calls to them that they believe in dearly, the values, and they explain that. And I have invited tonight, I thought we should also talk to two Democrats, in particular when it comes to the conversation that has, well, it's not even in particular to anything, because where do Democrats go next? Yes, Brad.
Well, I would like to have my mic turned on. Oh, great. Okay, so anyway, I want to talk about something because we're talking about civility. And one of the things I wanted to bring up as far as comedy goes is that we're not letting people do comedy anymore. Nothing gets to be funny. Well, nothing gets to be. And it's because I am all about being kind and civil. And when I talk to kids and groups and stuff like that, I totally watch what I'm saying. But when something is in the comedy context, you got to let it be in the comedy context.
Well, so that's what I was going to address to the 309 who says it's not cool to say no more old white men. That is totally racist and not acceptable.
And he's a moron. So let's move. See, again, the comedy
civil?
Context.
That's the civil
that's
part,
not
right?
Civil.
See, I'm saying I have no idea who this person is, so I don't know what they could be the most brilliant person. But as a comedian, this is how I'm doing this, and I'm making a smaller point by being totally exaggerating. So for him to be so serious, how dare anyone is racist, it just makes him kind of look douchey to me.
Oh, there we go.
Can you not say that either?
Yeah, we can say that.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm just saying.
Michael's trying to decide. My producer's trying to like,
all right, he loves it.
We'll let that
he
one go.
It.
And in the sense that you're, I mean, and like if we, the problem is if you have to explain a joke, that's always a long way around, but it's an exaggeration. That's what comedy is.
And that's part of the entertainment. So a response like that is only I'm going to grab that and I'm going to be so offended in every way, even though if he doesn't truly know that I'm joking.
Right.
What kind of person is he?
Right.
That's what I want. And I hope he's listening and he puts on what kind of person he is that would think that I've decided that's how it has to be.
Right.
Do you know what I mean?
Dave?
You know, I again, as an aging white man, I took great offense.
As an aged.
I could tell you were aged.
No, I'm aging. I'm not aged.
But ancient.
I took, sure.
Okay. Did you know he was kidding?
Did I know he was kidding? Yes, I did.
Oh, okay.
But was I?
But were you? Oh, I'm so confused now.
Yes.
Okay. Andre, what do you think? Did you think he was kidding?
I think he was, but, you know, there was a bit of an exaggeration there.
I think you were.
Although you weren't kidding about the no more old white men in office. You were.
Oh, that part was legit.
Yeah, no, that was legit.
That was legit.
You were exaggerating for effect.
Yeah, no. That was legit-ish.
This is why Democrats are going to keep losing.
I truly kind of believe if we had no more old white men, we'd be better off. But again,
but it's not true. From that.
But it's not. But it's not really true. But
well,
then I'm saying, there are nice guys. And why is everything so racist now? Why everything, especially white people with the racism, I'm so sick of it. You know, again, with all my guilt, because I have everything and have been handed everything, and I got born in the greatest, easiest situation in the world. It's so amazing to me that so many people who are born just like me are so awful and mean, and they're everything's racist against them. What is that? And that's where a lot of the civility comes in, because they are going to go just the opposite.
Well, it's all part of the victimization.
That's right.
The victimization of the power class.
That's right.
Of the white folks in this country who believe, and particularly the white folks on the conservative right, who believe that they are victims. I mean, Donald Trump is the greatest victim ever, because he presents himself as, oh my God, I'm under siege. It's the Democrats are destroying and blah, blah, blah. Like, dude, you have the White House, you have the House, you have the Senate, you have the courts.
That is interesting.
What are you whining
about?
And all
the fraud and everybody's fraud.
Snowflake. They're all a bunch of snowflakes.
That is interesting, because yesterday I came out, I posted that what Maxine Waters said was awful, that's not okay to say, to harass mm-hmm. people in public. I put that out there. And oddly, I started getting attacked by people who thought, I don't know if they thought that I was being sarcastic. I genuinely mm-hmm. have said that. I didn't think it was a smart thing to say. And Republicans came at me really angry yesterday. I'm like, I was wondering, why are Republicans so very angry? I'm not angry.
Why are they angry?
Why are they so very angry?
For attacking Maxine
anything.
Waters.
But why are they mad? No, my question is, why are Republicans mad about anything?
Okay.
It seems like Republicans have the whole table right
here.
They're running the table.
Because, well, first of all, in the height of Obama, they were seeing it all go away. Wait a minute.
Yep.
We may lose everything. And now, when they get this racist demigod that has taken over, they can see themselves pulling it back, but they can still see time is against them.
You think there will be? So we, you know, we
at
posed
some
this question
point,
the other night.
There's going to be more
the
minorities
wave.
Than majorities. That's just all there is.
Yeah,
to
but,
it.
But that, that's
vote.
What that. But that's
right.
What that's what.
Yeah, you're exactly. right. That's my whole thing. Is we're in this situation not because Republicans, but because of people who refuse to frickin' show up to vote.
So what would you guys say to the voter?
Oh, I think before we move on to a question,
Dave. But yes. That's what
remind
the,
me. Just say millennial, and I'll yeah. remember.
So, but this is what. You know, I have seen for years and years and years Republicans recognizing exactly the phenomena you talked about, that the browning of America, they're becoming a minority. They eventually will be a minority in this country. They feel like they're losing their power. They're losing their ability. They're losing jobs to China. So they pass these things, the voter suppression laws, the voter ID laws that are designed to prevent minorities and Democrats from voting. They will continue to do things to limit the power, to limit the democracy of America. It's like the boy putting his finger in the dike to hold back the tide.
Because they don't want to compete.
It's true.
They want to have it handed to them, and I'm one of them. And they don't want to compete. And the problem is everybody else is coming up.
But
having to compete with the world now, and they don't want to do that.
But this should be isn't this the golden age of Republicanism right now? Is to have the Supreme Court, to have Congress, to have the executive branch.
But they still have
the majority
compete.
Of legislators. But this is.
But
I
they
mean,
only operate
what
else, on a
victory. Yeah. What I mean, more is what, there?
Yeah. The irony, the I don't know if it's irony or hypocrisy or both. Of folks on the right who are so hypersensitive to the tiniest slight, and they're the ones calling everybody else a snowflake. Like,
yeah,
you guys are the biggest snowflakes of all.
Well, and on the before we get to millennials, there was on the thread that I had posted, a friend of mine said that he goes, "Well, you never saw Republicans whining or crying during the Obama administration."
Oh, God.
Oh no!
Oh my God!
Are you kidding me?
That was
Are
on the.
You
and then
kidding
started
me?
Sending
you,
me
had,
messages.
You had Donald Trump saying that Barack Obama wasn't even a legitimate president because because he was born in Kenya. Well, he was black, so of course he wasn't born in the United States. Because we don't have black people born in the United States.
Oh my God!
Give me a break.
What do you want to say about millennials?
I was going to just ask you guys. So yet when we brought this up with the Republican discussion the other night too, what do you say to the millennials who don't want to vote because they don't want to identify with either party?
And the answer to the question is, you are the people who gave us Donald Trump.
Yes.
This is the easiest answer ever. If you voted for Jill Stein or for Gary Johnson because you thought that,
or you didn't vote,
or Bernie Sanders,
in the general election, if you voted for any of these guys because you said, well, I'm not comfortable with Hillary and Wall Street, you got what you deserved. We warned you. We told you this was going to happen. And by the way, when the conservative justice is confirmed, and let's not kid ourselves, that will happen eventually. When the conservative justice is confirmed, Roe versus Wade is going to go away. It is going to die. And Susan Collins, Maine Senator Susan Collins, tonight said, well, I have no problem, voting for a conservative justice because they'll honor precedent. Look at today's ruling in the Janus case on the unions.
Right.
They overturned precedent. It is what they do. They don't care about it. And people like Susan Collins or anybody else, whether it's millennials or people in my generation who are like, oh, I must have a perfect person or I can't vote for them. People, politics is about choices.
But even what else is going to go away is all the other choices. Gay marriage, they're going to attack it. Everything is going to be attacked. Planned Parenthood, women's health. These are all things that are going to, bake in your cake. But by the way, one thing they're going to make sure you happen, any white person wants to go to a restaurant, they get to eat there. I don't care.
With
whatever
guns.
It is.
From the 815, the crybaby way your guests are talking is the exact reason why Trump will probably be elected again. The left are losing their minds. But my question to the 815 but why does that bother you? If you know, here's a party that is on the run, trying to gain some ground. I don't see why having a conversation and working out the frustration. I hear Republicans who are very angry. So why does this bother you so much? They're not. Neither Dave nor Brad has any impact on your life. But I guess they just think you're crybabies. I haven't heard you cry.
Well, can I just say one thing?
Yes.
Yeah.
You're not freaking out. It's not Friday.
Yes, I know.
From the 847, Mr. Presidente, what respect did you have for the flag and the anthem and country by refusing to serve in Vietnam? So that's from the 847. We did that one from the
In his defense, nobody wanted to serve in Vietnam. It was kind of a time when everybody tried to get out of Vietnam and people had different opinions and people, we are at a time of ultra patriot. Boy, you can't be seen not being an ultra patriot at every moment of your life, or you're going to get it. Back then, and especially when people paid to get out of service, if you could do it, people did it.
Well, to quote the president, STDs were his own personal Vietnam, and that's something that he said in the interview. More for this on 720 WGN. On Monday, Representative Maxine Waters gave a speech in which she addressed a crowd in which he encouraged those who are disappointed with the administration to approach them in public, to tell them they weren't welcome. If you see them at gasoline stations, if you see them in restaurants. And it seemed like a clumsy way to encourage people to harass individuals in public. And I thought it was disappointing. I thought it was strange. And then, of course, the debate raged on social media. And it was, everyone jumping into the fight. And it felt like, and then, Andre, did you get this feeling?
Mm-hmm.
That felt like people got much meaner almost quickly. Like, people were angry and spiteful before and name-calling, but it felt like it was a quickening. Like, everyone got meaner much more quickly.
Absolutely.
On Monday.
Absolutely. I know we started, and we wanted this to be a discussion about civility, and that's what it should be. And I just don't understand growing up, you talk about, your parents were, you both Republican and Democrat. Same with my family. I can remember all my relatives, some very Democrat, some very Republican, but I never remember anybody ever insulting each other.
I don't remember anyone mocking each other in my family.
And they would talk politics. Think about as a kid, all the family gatherings, they're talking politics. I don't remember name calling or being rude. Or as you get to your point, both of your points earlier, you bring in this red herring, you start attacking someone's character or something they like or dislike or a belief that they have, which has nothing to do with the discussion. Why can't we all just have a discussion about it and be somewhat respectful? Why kick Sarah Sanders out of a restaurant? And on the flip side,
why is it okay for Maxine Waters, which it's not, to say, oh, you know what, attack these people in public.
But well, here's verbally. I'm sorry.
Well, right, yeah. Verbally, yeah.
And here's the thing. I can get on Facebook and I can get on the radio and I can say I don't agree with what Maxine Waters is saying, and the Democratic Party can hold her accountable. And guess what? More Democrats got down on Maxine Waters in that 24-hour period than Republicans have gotten down on Donald Trump in a year and a half. And the thing is, I can say I will be civil, and I could say I believe my party should be civil, but let's not ignore the fact that you have the insult comic in chief as president who is constantly violating every single norm and every single rule of civility. In attacking, whether it's attacking, name-calling, you know, his response to Maxine Waters was, you know, to attack her IQ.
That's a very strange go-to. He always goes to
funny
that.
Funny how he attacks the black person and says the black person has a low IQ.
Well, he said that about De Niro, too.
Oh, he said De Niro had a low IQ?
Oh, yes. I missed that one. Yes.
Okay.
He said he was punch drunk.
Well, but De Niro does. No, I'm kidding. Kidding.
Myrna, what do you think about all this?
It's like the saying about if you want respect, you have to give respect. And Trump supporters don't seem to understand that. Before I forget, thank you to your guests tonight and the ones last night, the Republicans, who represent what a Republican with education is. Because locally, it's a whole different story on how Republicans act compared to the ones that are in D.C. The ones locally, and I'm proud to say this about Illinois, they've shown a lot of class. If they don't agree with it, they state it in a way that's very educated, unlike the ones in D.C. who just keep, you know, supporting Trump, even though they know that it's, you know, his ideals are incorrect. They don't seem to have the gonads to say, hey, we don't agree with it. They just go along with it.
Yeah. It's very well said.
Thank you to your guests again tonight and the ones last night for having the gonads to be Republicans, but to be true to themselves and to their constituents. And I was telling Michael that earlier I was reading that a man in, I forget the state where the incident took place, the Red Hen State or the Red Hen restaurant.
Virginia.
Okay. A man was arrested today for throwing a bucket of poop at the restaurant while screaming out, make America great again.
Ooh, with poop? No. I didn't know you could make America great again with poop.
I don't think that makes anything great.
No. Oh, wow.
You know. Fertilizer. Farm to table.
Yeah, and they expect civility from non-supporters. How is that civil?
And that's
how does that make anything better? It's just showing their ignorance.
I agree. I mean, I'm trying to figure out a way to word this, Myrna, because the listener who said that saying that we don't need any more old white men. Yeah. It's like, thanks for calling me all those names. You know, I myself am not drawn to calling people names. That was Brad.
Well, but I was just kidding. I wasn't actually calling that person names.
Right,
I was doing it as a joke,
not...
to go over the top of even what I was doing.
Right. It's trying to be like uber aggressively cynical.
I was saying it to be silly. I was not,
right,
as I said, I was not calling that, as I said, I don't even know them.
Want to say you're sorry?
I'm so sorry.
Oh, see, that's not.
Because I wasn't really doing it for that reason. So
it's Jim from Macomb. So can you say to Jim from Macomb?
Well, now I know his name. It's just not.
I'm sorry.
He's a person.
I would never call Jim from Macomb a name.
See, there you go. Now you know. That's.
But I'm not apologizing for that.
I disagree. I would call him a name.
What would you call him?
Jim.
Here
we go.
Jim. I would too.
No,
if I knew Jim, that'd be fine. But I didn't know Jim. It was just the internet, and I was again joking. And you know what? If he was sitting right here, I called you an ancient old man, and
right.
I don't believe that.
And that was to Dave Lundy. He said that.
And that was
to
Dave Lundy. So, really,
and I'm 23. So
yeah, so he's 23.
Our listeners saying from the 630, the two guests don't sound very civil.
Civil. Again, comedy.
So Brad Tassel is appearing at the Zanies in Rosemont in St. Charles. Brad's going to be.
And I will do more of it.
And we'll do more of the comedy. Myrna, go out to the Zanies in Rosemont, in St. Charles, will you?
I'll try.
All right, it's going to be a very funny show. Very funny. You're a very funny man.
I know.
You have a great voice.
Here's
too.
What's funny though is I don't do any politics whatsoever. Zero.
That's why
zero
I asked
politics.
Jake. But see, that's the thing. That's why I asked him if he wanted to come on and talk about this because he doesn't do politics
again,
in the show.
I'm doing this. right now as just like a huge overgrown character that isn't really me.
Here, let me get telling Jim.
I hope listening. Jim's calling to tell Jim this is a character.
It is, right. It's hard to explain. I've tried explaining Dave Chappelle and Sarah Silverman to my son that they say racist and horrible things in order to shine a light on racist and horrible things.
But they live a life of kindness. I do adult shows like on every once in a while, and I don't like curse. And my daughter has never heard me say the F word or the S word or anything like that ever in her life.
Wow.
Never heard me say it. And I don't say it in my public, but when I'm doing something like this, this is almost kind of a character thing that I'm doing, even though there's a little truth in there of what I'm thinking, but mostly
how you
feel. Yeah,
right.
How I feel, but it's all, you know, in regards to Jim, of course I don't believe any of that. You know, of course I'm not really saying that. And no one knows who he until now,
yes.
And now I can't do it. So
I know, now you can't do it.
But he's
Jim.
Taking that. Yeah, he's taking
Jim.
That. Yeah, hi,
so
Jim.
Apologies
yeah.
from the show.
No, yeah, from the show. But not from me. I will not apologize for the first part. But anyway.
Just on behalf of us.
Yeah. So people are asking who's on the show. We have Dave Lundy, who is the president of Aileron Communications.
He's a president. That is
he's a president.
President. You are, wow.
He's also a political strategist. He's also a regular panel member on Friday nights. Brad Tassel is a longtime comedian. He is a public speaker, has toured talking to students about bullying. So
I have a master's in behavioral science.
There you go. All of those things. From the let's take Glenn. Glenn's been on hold for quite a bit. Hi, Glenn. Thank you so much for holding on.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I fear kind of in general what direction the American people's mentality is going, because it seems as the more crazy stuff Trump tweets, says, and does, like his Space Force and all this goofy stuff, it seems like the more crazy stuff he says and does, his approval ratings go up. You know, and that to me, that just shows me that the American people aren't using their heads, you know.
Well, if it helps at all, last week when with the child separations, or between last week and this week, President Trump's approval rating dropped by 9 points. His approval dropped by 4 and his disapproval rose by 5. It was a massive change, and it was the American people's response to ripping babies out of the arms of their parents.
But let's be clear about something. Most people are not Trump fans. Over 50% did not vote for this man, and a lot did not vote.
Well, here's the thing. 50% of the population did not vote about, right?
Yeah.
And of that, the numbers... So what it comes down to, just so everybody... And I found these numbers. You can Google them. It's pretty easy to find. Which it comes down to 1 out of 5 Americans voted for President Trump, which means that fifth dentist doesn't think he should brush voted for Donald Trump. More after this on 720 WGN. That's what we need is some cheerful music to have conversations
happy.
About what's going on in our country. We're talking about the reaction from Democrats, not only to the statements by Maxine Waters earlier in this week, encouraging people to harass public servants in public places, but also what happens next with the Democratic Party. The Republicans are running the table. They've got the Supreme Court. They have the Congress. They've got the executive branch. So we're going to talk about that in a moment. But Donna also wanted to chime in. You both texted and are calling. Donna, I saw your text come across the screen. How are you doing tonight, Donna?
But the problem with Trump is he is not normal. He's this odd combination of a lack of intelligence and malice. Usually historical figures that are that malicious and that crazy are also intelligent. But he managed to combine the two worst characteristics you could have in a human being. And we talk about politics and we're ignoring the fact that he's not normal. Someone sent me him reading the allegory of the snake. It's like he just discovered allegory. Oh my God, it's frightening. It's just frightening.
How about when he said that Frederick Douglass was a great man? Is a great man,
and is really coming a lot, or you know, coming. He's really gaining traction, or something. It was.
I don't like allegory. Those kind of movies scare me, and the boys.
Well, I mean, he read the allegory of the snake, and it's like, oh, this is wonderful. What a great thing. I can use this. You see, he just discovered the allegory. Well, I think that his son brought home his homework, and he just discovered, oh, this is the allegory. This is wonderful. It's very frightening. Don't talk politics. It doesn't do any good. This man, he has a problem. He is not normal.
Interesting. So, go ahead, Dave.
I actually have to beg to differ. I mean, yes, he's not normal. I'm with you on that one. But I think that you're incorrect to say he's unintelligent. I think he's uninformed. I think he's ignorant. He's willfully ignorant. But Donald Trump is an intelligent man. He's got great guile. He just has very little intellectual curiosity. So. I think we make a mistake as Democrats.
I don't think that's intelligence. I think that's like an athletic ability almost. You know, like you know, you can dunk so many baskets, you can do this, you can do that. You know, you can be a great athlete, you know, because your body normally does this. His brain normally does this. You know, Lord knows he's not a great athlete. I mean, look at him. But, you know,
I'm curious, don't you guys think that social media has fueled so much of this hatred and this spew and just everything that's out there? It's unprecedented for the president in general, but for this time to have so much on Twitter, and it's just there's so much out there. And I think that a lot of that fuels negativity as well.
Well, it's easy to get it out. I mean,
it's so immediate.
If you look at papers from the 1920s, there was a ton of yellow journalism, a ton of back and forth. And hey, look back at Hamilton, look back at what they said, Burr and stuff like that.
Papers,
trying to, you know, Aaron Burr tried to take over the country, get an army together. You just didn't hear about it every second of the day somewhere. You know what I mean? It had to get to you over months and months and months.
Well, and I think on the social media question, is it a cause or is it a symptom?
Right.
Of the era that we live in.
Yeah.
And I think it's probably a little of both. But look, the internet, and before social media, there was, you know, the comment section on you know, the newspaper website.
Oh, yeah.
Remember,
yeah.
The Tribune did away with their comment section. Cranes did away with their comment section. Because
I keep my text screen open. I might not be able to get to all of them, but it's open for now.
It's a nonstop exacerbator is what it is.
Yes, completely agree. A nonstop exacerbating.
Yeah.
Let's call Trump and see if he knows what nonstop exacerbating is.
Hold on. Yes, Donna?
Okay. The only thing I want to say is, like, with President Obama, you know, he would disappoint me sometimes. He wouldn't do what I thought was, you know, he didn't live up to his capability. You know, George Bush disappointed me, you know, many times. But they were normal.
Well, Donna, you know? Here's the thing that, and I wonder, is that to that, but so many people either don't believe that, don't feel that way, or don't care that it's not normal.
Oh, well,
or
that's
their
frightening.
Level.
If they don't care, that's frightening.
Well, I think a lot of people don't care.
It's not only don't care, it's their level.
Yeah.
Because
think
about this. Think about this.
Oh, my
Obama,
God. We have a mental health
How
crisis.
Is it anybody in the world can listen to Obama talk and not go, that is a very intelligent man saying very thought-out, thoughtful words, and then listen to Trump and not see the difference?
Exactly.
I don't understand
but I mean,
that,
even
but
Bush,
they do.
You know, Bush was not a great orator, but he was normal.
I might be missing this. I'm a little slow,
but I think what Donna was saying is Donald Trump is not normal.
Yeah.
Donna, what are you trying
to say?
He's abnormal.
Abnormal.
Exactly.
Igor got the wrong brain and put it in.
Okay, let me, Donna, thank you for calling and texting. We'll talk to you again soon. Have a good night.
Thank you.
I want to ask you this. So what do Democrats do next? What does your party do to get some sort of semblance of leadership, of direction? Because it seems like, I mean, we had this, we saw this election last night in New York, this young woman. But are there enough? Is there enough? There's no momentum right now.
For her, I think there is.
For her, there is.
Oh, pick me.
Yes.
I actually think the answer is quite clear. I think that if Democrats spend the next 4 months talking about, and I don't mean any disrespect to Donna, but if Democrats spend the next 4 months complaining about Donald Trump, talking about how he's not normal, talking about how he's evil, talking about how he's mean.
Whining and complaining.
Whining and complaining. We will lose. If we talk about Russia for the next 4 months, we will lose. If we talk about what matters to the American people, we will win. If we talk about what Donald Trump's sabotage of Obamacare is doing to your health care premiums, we will win. If we talk about what we want to do for the American people, we will win. This is look, this goes back to if you remember James Carville in 1992, it's the economy stupid. Well, it may not be the economy stupid, but it is the people that matter. And if we have to focus on them and not just focus on our complaining.
And it was one of the big failures of the Obama administration was embracing Wall Street and not having the backs of all the people that got him there. I think we can argue about that later. But
okay, that's all crap. Everything you're saying is crap. Let's just move on.
Okay, see, Jim and McComb, I can hear Brad telling you.
There's the joke.
It's because you're not normal.
It's not normal. It's huge. Okay, here's what you need. And that's all cute stuff. It's like this girl.
Wow.
It's like this young lady in New York. They found someone to get behind. They found someone that sparks them, and they vote. Obama sparked so many people that were like, we're going, we're voting, and nothing could stop that wave. And then Hillary didn't have that, and all the Obama people said, we ain't going, and we're not voting.
Interesting.
So when somebody shows up that people can say yes, no matter what it is, that's what happens.
And there's Zach,
no matter what you say or don't say.
Zach, what were your thoughts? You wanted to join this conversation on this particular topic, didn't you?
Yeah, thanks for letting me on the air. I'm an overnight truck driver. You guys keep me up all night. So
love truck drivers, baby.
But no, I mean, the overall negativity coming out of politics these days burns a breath of fresh air like New York. I mean, I've been a Republican my whole life. I'll tell you what, these new politicians winning these primaries, I would vote for someone like that any day of the week. And I think the American people are starting to see all this negativity and starting to wake up and supporting these grassroots movements with these people, fresh breath of air coming through all this negativity. That was all I wanted to say about it.
That's great.
Can I ask you a question? I'm curious because you said you've been a Republican your whole life. This woman is a socialist. And so at what point does the breath of fresh air balance out against policies that you just fundamentally disagree with?
You have to come to the point of weighing the greater evils. I myself am conservative, so can't say I agree with everything she says, but at the same time, to see a party I once united with separating families and ignoring what the American people really want and threatening companies, you know, that's not the party that I've supported my whole life. So,
and I agree
for the better of the nation, I rather, you know, you got to pick the person who's going to unify the country better in this case.
Well, and I would say to you that I love what you're saying, and there are going to be some Republicans who are going to do the same thing that this lady is doing. We need them to show up.
And there are going to be Republicans and Democrats. I mean, the thing is, I hope we come to a point where, fine, you've got your party, you have whatever allegiances you've developed over a course of a lifetime, your experiences, you know, whether it's because you believe in your right to bear arms or the right to have choice, and then take a step back and go, well, how else do these people fit what I need, what my family needs, what will help us move forward? And that's something, like, if you look at the candidate, look at their policies, look at what they're talking about. And Zach, I think that yours, Lundy's not going to let me end on Zach. Yes, Dave?
I'm sorry. I fundamentally disagree with you on this point.
Okay.
I really do.
I don't believe in voting straight. I hate
you
voting straight party tickets.
Unfortunately, what we see.
I hate it.
I hear you, but that's why we lose. I'm sorry. That is why we lose. And if you look at what's happening in Washington, the Republicans, who is in charge of the chamber is what matters. I'm sorry. I will vote for a mediocre Democrat over a good Republican for federal office.
Okay.
Because if you do not have control over the chamber, you have nothing. You don't have subpoena power. You have no accountability over Trump. All you have to do is look at how Republicans are failing in their Article 1 duties of holding the executive branch accountable. And so if we do not have a chamber, we have nothing.
Think of the statement McConnell said, no matter what Obama does, even if it helps the country, we will not do it.
Interesting. Is that the kind of Republican that you believe it helps Americans in saying no matter what Obama does, we will be against it even if it helps the country?
I think a flatline approach to that hurts the country. I think you have to look at everything item by item. And as a conservative, I just think too many conservatives are just playing dumb and going down party lines and not really thinking about anything. If there was a standout Republican, kind of like a young John McCain, that would stand up against what was going on but still be conservative, I think there'd be a lot of millennial voters that would support that.
I agree with that.
But a lot of Republicans are too scared to upset Trump, and they're hiding. You know, this young lady out in New York, even though she's a socialist, you know, she excites the mass. She gets people excited. She kind of has an Obama vibe. And as a millennial, I'll tell you, that sounds pretty good right about now.
Yeah.
Well, Zach, it was an excellent time to talk to you. I think that was a perfect
you
way
win.
To win. Zach wins the night.
Do you have any prizes? What do you got in the prize closet?
I do have prizes. Zach, you're from the 630, aren't you? I've got a Lou Malnati's pizza for you.
Oh.
Hold on the line, and Michael will get your information. We've got a Lou Malnati's pizza. We can send out. We'll send you the gift card. And
we ended on such a good note.
Yeah, Brad's real quick. We gave away a prize.
Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez is her name.
Excellent.
I know we've been just referring to her as, you know,
the lady from New York.
The lady from New York. Yeah, that's her name.
Go to LouMalnati's.com and have a pizza. Hey, Mike, we have a little bit of a dilemma in the Allstate Showcase studio, Skyline studio. Everyone kind of feels like...
we're tired.
No. Nobody feels like they have... I mean, we will plug. Looking at Dave Lundy, and he's
we
looking
have a
like,
couple
I don't,
of good
I got
things.
Nothing. I got nothing.
I,
got nothing.
I know good things. I don't understand.
I got my family.
Listen how you've said that.
Yeah.
I got my family.
I always talk about my family.
My daughter is 16 and going to college next year, basically.
Oh, man.
Junior year in high school.
So tell me something good.
Yeah, no. it is hard that, but it's a good thing because as opposed to just leaving for college, she's going to the local university for her last 2 years of high school, and she'll be only up the road. So we have access, and my wife is a professor at that university. So she won't, as opposed to just leaving forever, it's a great tune-up to then someday in 2 years be ready for her to disappear, which will be a lot easier when we have this kind of gone a little bit, but still I can just drive over there and go, hey, open up.
Yeah, this
open
is my
up.
Last summer with
She'll
Griffin.
She'll move and won't tell you.
Yeah, this is my last summer with Griffin before he goes to high school. So I'm trying to really spend as much time with him as I can.
Goes to high school? Is he going to go to boarding school?
No, but I'm saying it's going to be different next year. And when he starts, I'll be, my schedule, being here, I used to be with him until bedtime.
Yeah.
Right? So now I'm not going to see him very much at all until just like Saturday and Sunday is the only time I'll really see him.
Oh, that's true.
Because it's school. So
because your schedule's crazy.
Yeah, so during the only time I get to spend time with my family is during White Sox games.
Yeah.
You know.
See, there's something good about the White Sox.
Yeah,
you.
The White Sox. You're a huge fan of the White Sox just playing.
Which is why last night's rainout was so much fun. It wasn't a rainout, but I was really, really thrilled to come down early on a day when I was
and just sit around.
That's Nick D's in studio. Do you want to join us?
Sure.
Hold on a second. Let me find you. There we go. I got that one.
Hi,
Nick D.
Hey.
I want to, Andrea, do you have any interest in seeing Jurassic World?
No.
Okay. I don't understand why people get so angry about Jurassic World, Nick. It was a fun ride. It was a good time. Nick didn't know I was going to make him go on the microphone. I put him under the gun. Now, I know that, Dave, you're not going to see Jurassic World. Are you thinking about it?
No, I'm thinking about it. You really got me, going like, oh, maybe this is okay.
I personally think it's the best of any of the Jurassic movies.
Is this the
better
third?
Than Tag?
This is the fifth.
Oh, this is the fifth.
Yes. Jurassic Park.
I saw Jurassic Park.
Jurassic Park Lost World, Jurassic Park 3, Jurassic World, and now Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom. And I think it's the best of all of them.
I very much
and of course, there was Jurassic World Electric Boogaloo.
Right.
That was an awesome Jurassic
World. That really was,
That's
too.
That's a really good
Went
one.
Straight to VHS.
I'm with Nick, though. We were talking about this yesterday off the air, but, there was some good chomping going on in that movie.
Listen, the reason I see those movies is because I want to see people getting eaten by dinosaurs.
Yes.
I don't care about the plot. I don't care about dialogue. I
well,
want dead people
win.
Chewing up dinosaurs. I want, it took 45 minutes for a dinosaur to show up in the first Jurassic Park movie.
Yeah.
And plus
45 minutes.
And you counted.
Yes.
Well, I kept looking at my damn watch. I was like, is there going to
be dinosaurs?
Jeff Goldblum has a line in the first Jurassic Park movie where he looks into the camera while they're in the truck and he goes, excuse me, are there going to be any dinosaurs in your dinosaur park? And I was like, my thoughts exactly, Mr. Right. Goldblum.
Yes.
Thank you, Jeff.
I love that. I also, before I forget, I want to make sure Brad is going to be at the Zanies.